Welcome back to Megan and Morris in the Morning on News Talk 1290 CJBK. As you know, we were away on holidays during the first part of January, and to take with me, I picked up a copy of a book, and that book was called No Mountain Too High, and I took that with me to read during our holidays, and wow, it was quite a book, and filled with inspiration. And the book is about, it's a father's book written about his daughter, Stacy Levitt, who was killed in an automobile accident. She was hit by a car while jogging, and it is an incredibly inspirational book about a father's love for his daughter, but it goes way beyond that. And Morris read the book just afterwards and felt the same way that I did, and we felt it was important for us to have the author and father of this book on our program. Yeah. And his name is Ned Levitt, and he joins us now. Good morning, Ned. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, good morning, Megan. Thank you for having me.
Ned, before we start about the book No Mountain Too High and the resulting book about the poetry that came out of it, I Am a Rose, can you tell us about Stacy?
Oh, do we have a couple of days? But in brief, I mean, she's my middle daughter, and she was like sunshine. She was beautiful on the outside and on the in. She had happy blue eyes and hair the color of wheat and these huge dimples that she could just drown in. And but most importantly, she loved to bring the best out of people. So she was really warm and loving. But when you were around her, you felt good about yourself, but you didn't even know why. But she was doing it subtly.
And she was killed in a car accident. She was 18, correct?
Yes.
And it was 1995.
Yeah, August 30th, 1995.
And I think, to me, the fascination, Megan and I have three daughters as well, and, mm-hmm. and to me the fascination is that I read this book, and it took me through it's almost as if I had lost a daughter. I got to be honest with you. It took me through every step of grief, recovery from grief, and trying to make something good out of what was a horrendous situation. Ned, tell us a little bit about the situation with Stacy and what happened to her and the early part of your grief.
Sure. Stacy was, in all respects, the child you'd want to have. I mean, she was a great student and a superior athlete, and she had been working as a lifeguard that day, that Wednesday in August, and she the night before she had boy issues, and so hadn't gotten a lot of sleep, and so she was fatigued. And fatigue actually plays a role in a lot of injuries and deaths of young people. But as an athlete, instead of going and having a nap, she went out for a jog to blow off the fatigue. And she was wearing earphones, which I advise all people not to do. Don't jog in the city with earphones on. And she did not see the car in the intersection. All of these things distracted her, and one step off the curb, and she was gone. It being a sudden death, of course, we never got a chance to say goodbye, and that's one of the complications that we had to wrestle with, and really shattered my world. I was suicidal for a period of time. But ultimately, as I started to fight my way through it, and realizing, of course, that I couldn't leave my other two daughters, Marnie and Jacqueline, and my wife, Cheryl, to bury me after Stacy, and then to have to cope with yet another loss, so there was no way out but through the pain. And I started to turn to Stacy, really, her poetry and what she had to say. I thought about, what if we could trade places, and of course I prayed to God at the beginning every day that we could, but we couldn't. So I try to make myself the kind of person that she would be proud of, and also to take strength from her thoughts and the beauty of her words, and I found it. And I would read her poetry all the time, every day, as my inspiration. And then I found that as I shared it with other bereaved parents, that they similarly found inspiration. And that really is what set me on my path and on my journey.
And we're speaking with Ned Levitt, who is the author of the book No Mountain Too High, but also in addition to that, and more importantly, is a father, and the father of the late 18-year-old Torontonian Stacy Levitt. Can you tell us about the journey and where Stacy's book has taken you?
Yeah, we published her, it was actually her poetry journal that she put the best of her poems that she wrote in this journal from the age of 9 years old. And we published it, that journal, unedited, with some additions that we put in, and published that book within 9 months of her death. And for anyone who's experienced traumatic loss, like that, you know, you can't tie your shoelaces for 9 months.
That's
so
true.
It's remarkable that we were able to do it, and it came out to be a beautiful book with a picture of Stacy on the cover that she had taken with the sun setting behind her on a mountain in Mexico called Mount Ixta. And often men have to, you know, grieve through doing. And so a year after her death, still feeling horrible, I chose to finish her unfinished business. They were turned back, the group of girls that she went with from that mountain in March before she died because of weather. And she wrote beautifully about how much she wanted to finish that climb, maybe return one day. And so my brother and I and four Outward Bound instructors who led us took the mountain for her 14 months after she died. And as an afterthought, because I just wanted to finish the climb, I decided I had to leave something behind. So I had an all-weather box made for the book. I put the book in it, chained it to the mountain at a beautiful pass about a third of the way up. And then I as another afterthought, put a notebook and some pens in the box. And I didn't know if it would be there a day or a week, a month. It didn't matter to me. It's now been, well, getting close to 8-9 years since. I still get back full notebooks with entries from people who climbed that mountain.
That's the fascinating part of it. It was when you put it there, reading through the book, you didn't really care how long it was there,
no.
As long as there was an acknowledgement that that people had read it and had seen it. Now, for folks who haven't read the book, the copy of her book, which is called "I Am a Rose," correct?
Correct.
You go back occasionally, replace it, and then friends that you made during your trek through the mountain replace it because it's so well worn and so well read. And
right.
It's amazing to me that it continues to remain there, and all you do is you replace the book, not because it's taken, but because people read it.
That's exactly right. And I get back those notebooks full,
yes,
of the messages.
How many do you still get full notebooks?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. It's remarkable. And the fellow and his daughter that take care of it, Miguel Cortez, he's an engineer that climbs. For that community, there's the climbing is sort of, that's the recreation on the weekend. That's,
mm-hmm,
what they do. It's a very high mountain, though. It's 17,000 feet, and altitude is a big challenge at that height. But he's very proud to be the keeper of Stacy's Caja Azul, which is Spanish for Stacy's Blue Box. And it's become a bit of a sacred place for the townspeople there and people from Mexico City who go there to climb.
And you've received notes from people from Denmark, from all over the,
yeah,
world. You receive email notes about Stacy's poetry and about how much she's come to mean to people who have read her book. And
exactly.
Folks, for those who haven't read the book and don't know Ned, he took this trek shortly after his daughter died. He had no mountain climbing experience. He suffered altitude sickness, and many times you didn't think you could do it, but on the very on the day that you wanted to climb the mountain, you climbed right to the summit.
Mm-hmm.
And what were your feelings like? You describe them in the book, but tell our folks what was the first thing you thought about when you got to the top.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm in pretty good shape. I've always been athletic, but yeah, I've never climbed mountains before. You know, even 14 months after a loss like this, you're still very sick, very debilitated. I don't know how I made it to the top, because I don't think I was in the right physical condition and mental condition to do it, but I had such a desire to finish her unfinished business. It's really the will that got me to the top. And it was about, you know, as you know from the book, you know, some, you know, 20 feet from the summit, that, you know, I just hung onto the rock just crying,
yes,
because I was close to the summit, and it became so hugely emotional. And then when I came over the top ridge, you know, and my brother right behind me, it was hard to describe, but I mean, it was a very, very spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
We conducted a service for her at the top, and I thought about the one thought that was most prominent in my mind is, she never saw this, but she would have wanted to see it, and I was seeing it for her.
Yeah. Mm. Ned, Stacy's book, I Am a Rose, you had published, and I believe, did you have 2,000 copies of the book done originally?
Yeah, no, actually just 500 copies made originally. Yeah.
Now, how many more have you published since?
Well, we now make it available through the bookstores, like my book, No Mountain Too High, because if you read my book, I thought that people would want to acquire Stacy's book.
Right.
Yeah.
But prior to that, we never sold it. We only gave it.
Right.
And it was my mission in life to share her spirit and her wisdom with others, so I would give it to bereaved parents, because I threw myself into bereavement work I found that incredibly healing. And as I would do that, I would give it to bereaved parents, and then people would talk about it, and I'd get requests for the book. And I, when I come across a bereaved parent, I won't take money from a bereaved parent. The book has to be given.
Mm-hmm.
It's an important part of it. And so over 4,000 books have been given out, and now, you know, we're getting close to 1,000 that have been sold.
It's remarkable. And, Ned, one of the other things that really struck me about you and your whole family was that in the beginning of the book, when you talk about your journey after Stacy passed away, you talked about meeting the man that actually hit Stacy.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell our listeners about that experience? I was just absolutely overwhelmed by your explanation of what happened then.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was a good man. He was not at fault. It was just an accident that shouldn't have happened. He remained at the accident scene and tried to help any way he could. He was devastated himself, so he was a victim too. And he was trying to get a hold of our family, trying to communicate with us to help us, to apologize. He felt guilt, but he wasn't guilty. And finally, when all of the legal stuff was settled to my satisfaction, that he was not at fault, I agreed to meet with him, not really knowing why or what would come of it. But it was so important for him to hear from me that our family forgave him. Again, not because he needed forgiving, he was not at fault, but emotionally he did.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to hear what were the last moments of Stacy's life through his eyes, mm-hmm, became very healing for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, we embraced, and everybody in the room was in tears. But it was something I discovered at that moment, the power of reaching out and helping other people. And that was really the beginning of my understanding that my healing path was going to be by helping others heal.
And you, in the back of your book, give some suggestions about how you can help people. Can you share,
sure,
with some of our listeners that?
Well, one of the things is, of course, you know, you're stuck if you're in crisis of any sort, bereavement, depression, alcoholism, whatever it is, in a culture that doesn't want to, you know, wants to deny problems.
Yeah.
And certainly we're in a death denying culture. So tears, for example, are viewed as being, you know, if you mentioned Stacy's name to me and I started to cry in the first year, you'd think you inflicted pain.
Yeah.
No, you released pain from me. You gave me permission. You gave me the opportunity to cry in the presence of another human being. So the reaction to tears is really counterintuitive in our culture. The other thing is that, regrettably, even though I was the wounded person, if I wanted to keep my friends and family, the ones I wanted to keep close to me, I had to tell them about my needs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to tell them that, you know, during holiday time, I may not be comfortable sitting around a table, so please don't take it personal and understand.
Yeah. There's some wonderful, you know, Ned, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 words that deal everything from accepting to remembering to time. And, folks, I can tell you, they are very helpful. I read them, and I don't mind telling you that I actually cried, to be honest with you, because this is what people need to know. If you don't know how to handle a bereaved situation, someone who is grieving, then these words really help you.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
It's just being aware of and fighting against what the culture tells us. You know, the culture tells us to really essentially isolate the mourner, you know, and that's not what it is. We're social animals,
yeah,
and we need to communicate.
Ned, I'm going to share something with you, not that you need me sharing it, and then I'll leave it for Megan to finish off, but I just need to share with the folks out there and with you one thing that I've highlighted, because, in fact, even though Stacy passed away, she actually helped you get over it.
Oh, yeah.
You said that after, you still had a lot of trouble dealing with her loss. Even after you climbed the mountain, there were a lot of things you were trying to come to terms with. But then you'd suddenly words came into your mind. Words came into your head almost as if Stacy has spoken to you. Mm-hmm. And you were with a group of people, and you told the group what the words were. And the words were,
mm-hmm,
I'm going to have trouble saying this, to be honest with you, Dad.
Okay, that's
Dad. Dad, I am sorry I had to leave. I know how much it has hurt you, but I have left you three gifts: my love, my spirit, and my poetry. If you share them with the world, people will come into your life and help heal your broken heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's tremendous.
Yeah. And I really, again, I'm not a believer that, you know, the other world and the other side and everything. Like that. But it wasn't like I heard her telling me that, but the words came into, exactly the words you said came into my head, and my body began to shake, and I began to cry. It was the most powerful experience I think I've ever had since Stacy's death.
Yeah, that's tremendous.
Well, Ned, your book is called No Mountain Too High, A Father's Inspiring Journey Through Grief by Ned Levitt. And, of course, Stacy's book is I Am a Rose, A Life in Poetry by Stacy Levitt. Both of those books are available at every major bookstore. Of course, there's also the website, iamarose.com, iamarose.com. And your book is just truly inspirational, and for anybody who has lost a family member, we would encourage you to read it. And for those of you who are just interested in a father's love for a daughter, this is a truly remarkable book, and we so appreciate you joining us today, Ned. Thank you.
And thank you. A tremendous opportunity to bring this message to other people. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you take care of yourself, okay. And all the best to your family.
Thank you
very much. Thanks, Ned. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And as we say, that is Ned Levitt, who is the author of No Mountain Too High. And
well, I know it's hard. When I start thinking about ever losing any of our kids, it's very difficult. I have three daughters, as Ned did, and the idea that it would have to come to something like this, although it happens every day, it's just almost too much to bear.
Yeah,
and the early part of the book, when Ned is talking about his grief. You can tell what grieving is all about because there's almost a total lack of detail. It is almost as if he's going through that time in a daze and in a haze. And I cannot pretend to know what he has gone through, but by reading the book, it gives me a better idea of what he has gone through.
It's a great book, and we also have a daughter that was Stacy's age when she died, and they have their whole entire lives ahead of them. And one of the things Ned didn't mention here about meeting the fellow that hit his daughter was he had said when he met her, you know, the man said, "What can I give you?" And you know, how much money or whatever.
That was for Stacy's memorial fund,
and he said, "You know, I want only $18."
Because Stacy was 18.
Yeah, no more, no less, $18. And he said, "And when we see you in the community, we don't want to see you suffering because that would be a burden too much for our family to bear. So, if you need help, go get help. But we don't want to see you suffering, and we would like $18 for Stacy's memorial fund," which is something that you can afford to give. And just a remarkable family, and again, it speaks volumes about how some people are able to turn their grief into
something valuable. Yes, the words at the end of the book are indeed, they're good fodder for people who should just, you know, who not just who have to deal with the grief, but who facing people who deal with people who need to grieve. You know, some people cross the road when they see someone that, you know, is in great pain because they've lost a family member and they don't know how to deal with it. So, you know, it's a great read, as we've mentioned.
And we will put both the names of these books on the website for Stacy on our website, so that if you are interested in looking these books up at a later date, you'll have the names of them.
And before we go to break, we just want to let you know our email, because we haven't given you our email yet. mandm@cjbk.com. That's mandm@cjbk.com. And I guess our number is 643-1290.
And we're going to take a break right now, but there was a study recently released which indicated that cell phone users drive like the old folks, and we'll be interested.